Okay, today, so another Tuesday for our English medium discussion. As I mentioned in the beginning of the last hour also, today is a rainy day, and therefore there may be some weak signals, but last hour we managed some or the other. So we are going to start with the point where we stopped last time, in Attakavagya. Third sutta, Suddhattaka sutta, I hope. Next one? Suddhattaka sutta. And before going into the formal presentation, if someone is having any other timely issue or any other report, we'll take few minutes and then go to the formal discussion, please.
Avasarai Bante, we have one report today. With your permission, I'd like to present that. This report is from Hasini. Dear Bhante, I am 14 years old and have been meditating for 2.5 years. This is my experience. Please advise me. I have been meditating more often and find myself in a just being state in my everyday life, even when I am not meditating. In this state, the mind is empty, but the body is still functioning. And I do not feel anything. There are times I am brought out by an overwhelming emotion, like anger, for example. However, other times, for example, when my mom tells me to do something, I argue with no emotion. I do not feel anger towards her. In fact, I don't feel anything. I don't emotionally attach myself to words I say during the argument. Even though I don't feel anything, and it would be better if I keep my mouth shut and just do what I still argue, because my ego is very big. When I argue with emotion, I'm not aware of my ego. But now when I argue, I do not feel anger or frustration, and my awareness is on my ego. Teruvan Saranai. Hasini. That's the end of the report, Bhante.
So the understanding ego is a very bright idea, but it is not always sweet in taste. It may be sour, it may be astringent, and specifically when it is interacting with someone. And ego is not only in an interaction with someone, even within yourself also there, but it will be very dramatic, it will be very eventful when a second person is involved. And if the second person is a affectionate person, ego is little stronger. And therefore, you have to understand, you must have a partner to understand it. So sometimes partner may get a wrong idea. You may be learning, of course. Learning happens at a cost. So therefore, you have to share with the partner, telling that when I'm talking like this, appear like maybe I am talking with harshness or talking with affection, but please understand me, I am learning. So that is why we are making and presenting the interview reports. It is like counseling. It is like free association. You just express yourself, maybe to me or someone, so that therefore you justify your mentality, but your partner, mother or father or someone, so occasionally you have to tell them, I am sorry if I have hurt you, because my intention was not, I am usually at the peace, but whenever you are telling me, it appears like interfering into my life, so therefore I have a natural reaction, but it is not beginning, the middle and the end, I am not malice. So I can share with you, please bear it up with me like. So that is the decent language, that is the civilized way we are doing. So therefore, even though you have your own inner internal justification, please do the just for the other partner, other person in the dialogue, person or a group. And these things little costly. That is why people get misunderstanding in friendships and the marriages and kind of thing. You justify yourself because you are at peace, your mind is at nothingness. But whenever someone is interfering, the reaction can happen. So therefore, second person is necessary, interaction is necessary for you to understand self. So halfway, you have to have confession, you have to have talking with other person. You have to just tell when she was in a peace and calm, Mother, can I talk to you? I have something to tell you, because often I am fighting with you, but please mind you that I am not malice with you, but this is my way. I am, it's gainful because I am learning my ego. Like at the age 14, it's a transitional period for a girl. You are about to attend to your higher ages, and therefore chemical body, physical body and social, emotional things are a little aggressive. It may be different from a boy, and impact basically is with the mother. So therefore, you are a meditator, please take a time and just talk with the mother sitting on her lap and telling this is what happened, and she will be really appreciating. But even if you are telling your mother or not, I appreciate you, because now you have a door to express yourself. So I welcome your report. Please continue. And internal balance, if it is going wrong, after telling something to the mother or something like that, take refuge of your primary object. But if the external balance is upset, you have to just talk. You have to have a rapport. You have to have a dialogue. And this is how you have to continue. That is my remark.
Thank you so much, Bhante. That's the end of the
report.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Swaminanda. You had mentioned a sutta that I could look at, the Sabba. Yes. So I've been looking at that, and I was wondering, you wanted me to present something about that. I think you mentioned for this medium, did you want me to give a presentation of the whole sutta, or
no,
just
the Sabbasava Sutta? In the early part, it says when you are meditating, there are some views coming, and that view indicates that you are progressing, but there should some pruning. You have to remove some branches and make the healthy frame. So unless otherwise you are meditating, your views will not come out. They will not express. But when they are coming, you should have a dialogue. You should have a talk with the others, because others can prove. Others can justify whether you are telling is just imaginary or because we are interacting with you. So these views that this just girl mentioned about, and whenever mother is giving something and talking with, she's just for the sake of arguing, she argues. But that argue may be self-centered or nihilism-centered. And one thing from self to nihilism pathway, some to self to self pathway, some to nihilism to self pathway. These are the five. So these things, this is the specifically thing I just wanted to specialize. There are five views happening. They are intermediate symptoms. You are in a dialectic path and your vehicle is aligned to some side. You are running, but it has some wrong alignments. So while running only, you can adjust the alignment. So you have to have a mechanic in the seat. He will tell, these are the way. Sometimes it may be burning too much of fuel, or alignments are wrong and brakes are not good and clutches are not good. So while running only, it can happen. That's a very brilliant the way, and the expansion of the same thing only you can see in Brahmajala Sutta. Brahmajala Sutta, 64 views. 49 happen to the successful concentration meditators. and other 13 is for the intellectual people. So gifted people are always messed up with views. And the immoral people, non-meditators, they don't have such problems. They have transgressional problems. They have the social problems. But the meditators are messed up with special views. And the Buddha is the only person even taken that issue. Sometimes other leaders are, it's just a wrong view. And they don't know they are in a wrong view. So Buddha is telling, while you are progressing, you as well as your disciples, go through these pit holes or pot holes, I don't know. And you are definitely falling. So you have to navigate in such a way, knowing you are vulnerable. So these five are very important. And then someone is talking, finding the answer for something like that. Still, you can see with what view he is talking about. It's very interesting in the politically running an institute and helping him and correcting him in the interviews, that views. Very interesting. And Venerable Jnanarama was is not well expressed, but it's very instrumental in that sense. When you are talking, he's carefully listening. Godwin also the same. And then ultimately he says, you are talking with that kind of a view. Undeniably you have to accept it. So that's the part, if you can prepare about 10 to 20, 15 minutes preparation on these five views.
And how I'm seeing them in myself or...
Yeah, I will give 15 minutes out of this 1 hour.
Okay.
And then we can see whether it is worthwhile in a discussion to furtherance. And because it's a novelty for present day, the teachers are teaching with wrong views. And the disciple can say, and we as outsiders, we can say what the kind of a wrong view he is in. Some people are psychopathic. Some people are nihilistic. Some people with that kind of a wrong view, and they are consistent. Their life is consistent, so just point it out. For his benefit or you to not fall into that trap.
Okay.
So be prepared 15 minutes for next week.
Okay,
next week?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
So now I am inviting Venerable Buddha Rakhita to lead the discussion with the new sutta.
So we'll continue again from this octet on the pure, the Sudaka Sutta. So I'm going to just repeat the last verse we treated last week and then continue on. Having abandoned the former, attached to another, carried along by impulse, they do not cross the tie. They grab hold and let go like a monkey grasping and letting go of a branch. Having undertaken observances by himself, a person goes up and down, attached to perception. By having realized the Dhamma with knowledge, the wise one, broad in wisdom, does not go up and down. One who is remote from all phenomena, from whatever is seen, heard, or sensed, how could anyone here in the world categorize him, that seer behaving openly? So again, just repeating that last verse, also because it's a one that really strikes very potently an image in my mind. My hut is surrounded by monkeys, and I have two different species, the black face or the purple face monkey, and then also the macaque. And they spend the day going from branch to branch, grasping hold of one branch and then letting go to grasp a new branch. Similarly, my own mind can be attracted to views and opinions or to ideas. And I notice that I let go of one and I grasp onto another. And as I've matured, I've come to understand that there is this process of holding of views and holding on to views, cultivating views, challenging views, And now I'm more and more happy as I get older to be ambiguous, to be not quite certain, to come down on one side or on the other, not to firmly grasp onto a view other than, you know, I try to hold it lightly, that I, you know, I try to understand that there's a different possibility. And so when I meet people who have a different view to mine, or rather than just say bickering or arguing with them, I appreciate that this is a different perspective, and that I'm curious to know why does this person have this view, or this this view, and you know, what's informing it, what's driving it, and what are my own preferences around a view. You know, what are my own conditioning factors into why I favor one view over another view? And in this way, I start to have more and more mastery over views. I can hold contradictory views. I can let go of views. I can change my view, and it becomes quite a playful thing to see the different views. And sometimes when I have discussions now with people, rather than sort of like holding on to my view as this is the only way or something like that, it's more of a discussion about that view. I'm more distant from my own view, and I'm curious about it. I'm trying to learn and be informed about this process of views. So in the commentaries to this sutta, the commentators mentioned that so much has been driven by craving and by views, as Venerable Dhammajiva just mentioned right now. There are people like who are more transgressive. They don't really care. They don't really have any views. They're just going to be driven by their cravings, while other people can be more principled and more attached to views, and they're not really driven by cravings, but they are driven by their views. So this dynamic of being driven by craving and driven by views is extremely powerful. And to have an appreciation, to be able to see these things happening in our life, is the beginning of mastery over these things. And if we have curiosity and interest in these processes of grasping on, or as they say, they grab hold and let go, like a monkey grasping and letting go of a branch, then we've come to a very powerful awareness of a very powerful process that's going on in our life. So the expression in English is actually to entertain a view. So if we can have that, I try to keep that in my mind, that I try to entertain a view, and that it may be entertaining, and not to be take it too seriously, and not to be too dogmatic about whatever view that I have, and that maybe we should really aspire for freedom from views. That doesn't mean to say that we should have no view and be like a doormat or something like that, or be clueless or be uninformed or be, you know, there is right view. And in fact, notably, the Eightfold Noble Path begins with right view and right attitude, sama ditti, sama sankappa. So having undertaken observances by himself, a person goes up and down attached to perception. So again, it's very notable that in attainment of sotapanna or so on, that one gives up observances or attachment to observances. So this this again propensity of people to be attached, to undertake observances, is again a very fundamental aspect of the human or of any being's makeup. That we like observances, we like habituation, and we take up these patterns. And as he says here, a person goes up and down attached to perception. So these observances affect how we see the world. So these observances can be embodiments of a view. Like we may have rituals, we may have sort of various practices. If you look at a lot of institutions, they have observances that get codified, and they reflect an underlying view held by that institution. And but having realized the Dhamma with knowledge, the wise one, broad in wisdom, does not go up and down. So broad in wisdom here, again, we very much appreciate people who are wealthy, who are learned, but it is the wise one who is broad in wisdom, who has the wealth of wisdom, that does not go up and down. So we can be rich and still tied to observances. We can be very learned and we can be tied to observances. But it is the wise who are not tied to these observances. They are not attached to their perceptions. They're not attached to their views. These things serve those people because they choose wisely what is appropriate for this situation that they're in at the present time and moment. So they're not stuck going up and down. They're not in a groove. They're not in a rut. So one is remote from all phenomena, from whatever is seen, heard, or sensed. How could anyone here in the world categorize him, that seer, behaving openly? So one of the meanings given to the word arahant is nothing to hide. So a seer behaves openly means they have nothing to hide, whereas people who, you know, are not true wise people, they're always trying to hide something. They're trying to hide their maybe doubt in their views, or they're trying to hide their transgressional behaviors. And they are remote from all phenomena. Here he's referring to they could be, they're not attached to those phenomena, or in meditation, one can become remote from the objects that are rising around one because one doesn't give any attention to them. Here he is referring to from what all phenomena being what is seen, heard, or sensed. So as one, particularly in samatha, develops samatha, then one becomes remote from all these sense objects because one has taken up the mental object internally. How could anyone here in the world categorize him? So this categorization is referring back to conceit. I am better than, I am equal to, or I am inferior to. Whereas we are, in fact, all individuals. We are all different. So this propensity, again, to categorize, when it arises instantaneously, whenever we meet anybody else, whenever two people meet, they are instantly, in that moment in time, assessing, is this person superior, inferior, or equal to me? Whereas the reality is that they're just different. And we do this to ourselves all the time. I'm superior, I am inferior, or I am equal. So this conceitedness is driving all engagements, all interactions all the time. And we're not aware of it, just as like a fish is not aware of the water around the fish. So we don't know about this kind of conceitedness and it's all its modes and aspects. We don't see conceit. We don't see our own conceitedness. We only see the conceitedness of others when it brushes up against ourself. And we don't realize that it's brushing against ourself because that is our conceit and their conceit interacting. So a wise person has this mastery over conceitedness. That doesn't mean to say that they're not more learned or they're not wealthier or they're not, you know, more talented in some ways. They are, but they just don't have conceit about that. They understand their position in the world. They understand their place. They understand their talent. And they're not bought into it. So this is these three suttas. Maybe it would be good if we could hear from Dhammajiva and we'll tackle the last two later.
Yeah, it is just a repetition of the last few that I found is the canonical and Pali way how the monkey is being used. So I took it as a short note, how the Buddha is taking the monkey mind. We are often mentioning it in our Satipasala, in our mindful school, Kapiva Sakang Pamukam Pahaya. Whatever grasp, throw away and jump into the other. So they are very volatile. They are jumping views to views. And that is not changing object. That is not changing the desire. This is the changing of issues, views. That's also changing. So very interesting. So therefore we must be reflecting each other, mirror to each other, for so that other person can see by interaction what kind of a view. I can either tell you, I can hint you, or you can learn by interaction, by brushing each other. That is what Venerable mentioned. When we are interacting each other, only views come into being. Interaction within, it will never happen, because you have to brush against something. When it is inside you, still fighting, but you can't differentiate. But whenever interacting with others, so we co-practitioners must discuss each other in a critical way, but it's not destructive way. And then we have to understand monkey mind. And the way monkey mind is more prominent to the meditators than non-meditators. But reality, non-meditators is totally in monkey mind. They don't know. Meditators, whenever they become monkey mind, they are aware. They are much worrying. But other people, all the time in monkey mind, they are not worrying. That is ignorance. That is kind of a blessing of the ignorance. So that is what I have to remark. So we can proceed, I hope.
So the last two verses in this sutta, they do not construct, they have no preferences, they do not assert, this is ultimate purity. Having loosened the knot of grasping that had been tied, they do not form desires for anything in the world. For a Brahman who has transcended the boundary, who has known and seen, nothing is tightly grasped. Not excited by lust or attached to dispassion. He does not grasp anything here as supreme. So they do not construct they do not construct views, for instance. And this is also referring back to this idea that the Buddha always presents about constructing our ego or being a house builder. How we build ourselves up, whereas the arahants do not build themselves up, or they're not constructing views, they're not fabricating, they're not trying to aggregate, and that tie to especially conceit has been destroyed, because they see that it's just a process of fabrication. For most of us, we just habitually construct ourselves. We habitually habitually have this conceitedness. I am this. I am that. I am better than this. I am better than that. I am inferior to this. I am inferior to that. And it's very related to this emotion of shame. So when we become familiar with the emotion of shame, then shame, rather than just paralyzing us and sort of making us, subordinate to somebody who shames us, we become free from that shame, and it becomes informative, like a friend saying to us that that this person is very conceited, and we appreciate. Oh, okay, this person is putting me down. This person is shaming me. And it's because of this propensity that I have and that they have to construct, that we always need to assert who is superior or who is inferior. So that they do not construct means not that they're like a robot or something like that, that they don't feel things. Instead, they are informed by their feelings, so that they're not overwhelmed by their own conceit or the conceit of others. And they don't have preferences. Again, they don't have a preference to be greater than or inferior to or equal to somebody else. Like when we say, I am equal, it's a denial that we're in fact all different. We're not equal. We're different. So even twins, for instance, can be as similar as possible in the world, but yet they are each different to each other, and they have their own preferences. So when we construct and when we have preferences, we're in denial of the reality of who we are and who other people are. So they do not assert this is ultimate purity. So in this sutta, again, if we go back to the origin story, it was about a person born with this like a moonlight almost glowing from their chest. So other people took this as a sign of ultimate purity. So they do not assert means like here, they don't go around saying, oh, this is ultimate purity, because in reality, purity is a mental phenomena. It's not a physical phenomena. I mean, we're not talking about physical hygiene here. We're talking about mental hygiene. And so this is ultimate purity. Having loosened the knot of grasping that has been tied, they do not form desires for anything in the world. So this knot of grasping that has been tied, again, is a very powerful image of how you would tie together the reeds, for instance, to make a boat, to make a canoe, to cross the river, to cross the floods. So once we cross the flood of suffering, then we put down the canoe or the boat that brought us across. And this, again, this idea of how the personality is formed, is tied together. And these words like we use in Buddhism, like aggregate or sankhara, something that is just loosely tied together. So when we untie this grasping that ties us together, again, this is tanha. So tanha is our like grasping nature. This is quite fundamental to all beings, is this grasping quality. It's only through enlightenment that one ceases to grasp, especially for things like rebirth or the desire not to be reborn or existence itself. So to not have this grasping is a very profound quality to uproot. They do not form desires for anything in the world. They don't desire anything in the world because they see it as fundamentally not worth holding on to. And they do not form desires is a freedom from desire, whereas most people seek freedom of desire. So they wish to be rich, and they wish to have whatever they want, whatever they grasp onto, whereas the arahant has a freedom from desire. In other words, they're not beholding, they're not attracted nor repelled for anything in this world. So as I mentioned earlier on, this sutta is particularly tackling this aspect of craving and views, and how craving and views are driving us through rebirth after rebirth, and they're driving us into what he calls construction of ego, construction of preferences, construction of desires. And it's this opposite force of freedom from construction, freedom from preferences, freedom from desires, that is the way out of liberation. And when we do this, then the knot or the like tying together of these different aspects of our personality or identity start to loosen. So we're not rigid, we're not fixed, we don't have to be something in particular, like I am better than, I am equal to, or I am inferior to you. So for a Brahman who has transcended the boundary, who has known and seen, nothing is tightly grasped. Not excited by lust or attached to dispassion, he does not grasp anything here as supreme. So this Brahman he's referring to here is the Buddha is talking about the true Brahman. This is the Arahant again. He's not a Brahman by birth or by practices like these, as he mentioned earlier, observances, or a Brahman as one who goes up and down attached to certain perceptions. This isn't the Brahman he's talking about. He's talking about the fully enlightened Arahant who has transcended the boundary. We all have boundaries, and we need to understand our boundaries, you know, clearly. And to transcend the boundary doesn't mean destroy the boundary or remove it, but not be as such framed or tied to that boundary, to that identity, to that personality, to that sort of act of being this person. So they're more free and light and like easygoing in a way, because they're not tied to I am this and I am that, I am inferior, I am superior. They have transcended the boundary of ego, the boundary of what it is to be this self. Who has known and seen? Again, this is the key to wisdom itself. Who has known and seen, and what have they ultimately known and seen? Are these enlightenment, these insights that bring us to the true, genuine knowing and seeing. Nothing is tightly grasped. So once we truly know and see, then nothing is tightly grasped. I mean, especially these grasped into the two ways here of craving or grasped by views. Not excited by lust or attached to dispassion. Again, here the Buddha is repeatedly bringing us back to what he would call the middle way. That means we're not excited by lust, or we're not under the power of lust, or we're not attached to dispassion. So dispassion being the opposite in a way to lust, like it could be qualities of numbing or indifference or callousness. He does not grasp anything here as supreme. So he understands that that Nibbana is the only supreme, so that with the ending of suffering we have attained the supreme. So within this realm of samsara, of these rounds of rebirth, there is nothing supreme in it compared to like the supreme nature of Nibbana, the supreme nature of freedom from suffering. Because whatever is supreme within samsara is suffering.
Yeah, I did the last verse you are referring to now.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So it was, they used the term simatigo. Simatigo means no boundaries. Therefore, understanding boundary, I first read Ken Wilber's book, No Boundary. And there he introduced the term for the first time, choiceless awareness. And we in Nilambe often talk about mindfulness related with the no boundaries, mindfulness related with choiceless awareness. But that is never referred to in the Theravada canonical literature. So therefore, type of mindfulness we are learning in Western thinking, I mean Nilamba type, and the other thing we are learning through the Satipatthana Sutta, or the mindfulness-based thing, the traditional monks tend to deny this choiceless awareness and boundary, no boundaries kata. And of course they will understand this as the wisdom, but they never happy to see the relationship with mindfulness. So whenever Jnanaponika in Power of Mindfulness, he put everything and give a broader viewpoints to understand the relationship with from mindfulness to wisdom, mindfulness to the no boundary, mindfulness to the choiceless awareness, and how it evolves into the wisdom. This is a German kind of analysis. So Venerable Dhammika, help me just leave aside the traditional translation or traditional interpretation of the mindfulness and see relationship with the no boundary and relationship with the choiceless awareness. And that part, no boundary part and the choiceless awareness, was fast growing. It's very prolific. And literature is going more towards that. So it was more attractive for me to understand the mindfulness to the traditional way of understanding. So some local monks are blaming me, thinking that I am appreciating the westernized ideas. And it is very dynamic. It's a very prolific, lucrative in the sense. And so Godwin was in that kind of an idea. He is not much taking this as an object of meditation, but give a general mindfulness as the base. Now it is going to multidimensional mindfulness to the climatic changes, mindfulness to the healing, mindfulness to the preventative, and wherever it goes, these boundaries become. Formal education means learning boundaries. Computer science means learning boundaries. Fixing boundaries, that is called delimitation. And in Vipassana also, you have to start understanding the mind and matter. Namarodha Parichyeda Jnana. The understanding this is the end of Nama and this is the end of Rupa, and you see the clear classic difference. But when it comes into the Sammasana Jnana, boundaries are disappearing. Whether your naming of that particular thing is your concept or it is born with that name. But different people give different names for the same thing. They are fighting each other. That is what we call the fundamentalism. So whenever the boundaries are there, the sectarianism is there. So boundaries is completely imposed with the present-day foolish education system. More you educated, you are fighting with that particular term, that particular definition, and he can't tolerate others. But therefore, they can't understand the changing nature. So this is Indika Simatiko Brahmano Tasana Kanati. There's no boundaries for him. He understands that definition is for that context. And that definition will be changing into other contexts. So they consider this as a cheating nature, perverted nature. So you must have the definite idea on that particular term. That is boundary. And most dogged, most used book was the No Boundary in Nilambe Library. So later I got my own copy. And later I found that Ken Wilber is now giving interviews in the YouTubes, understanding integral development, horizontal development, all the kind of thing. So some may say they are just mental proliferation, not meditation. But person like me, born in Eastern countries and learning from the Venerable Jnanaponika, how to understand mindfulness in the present context, in the contemporary context, for that no boundary was very interesting. And it is highly related with wrong views. The person who is having stereotype views, they have boundaries. And they are talking with their own frame. So what I am telling is, just please, at the beginning of your talk, give the definition of your boundaries, definition of your theory, definition of your matter, they're easy to understand. And the Venerable Dhammika mentioned was that you have to understand your frame and my frame, and then we can constructively argue, discuss. But I am going to disprove it, that means we are making enemy. So we have to understand the boundary. And the last sutta, ending up with Duttataka Sutta, ending up with Adosi So Ditta Mideva Sabbanti, translated, the Arahant is getting rid of all the views. there is no sammāditti. He is beyond sammāditti also. Any ditti is micchāditti. We are holding any ditti, micchāditti. So sammāditti is no ditti. That's what I learned in 1977. But later I can understand occasionally, then and there I take a ditti. I take my stand. So I ask the other person, I am talking with this stand, this ditti. You can go against or for, no problem, but you have to understand the base. But no ditti is hypocritical. It is not accepted in Theravada tradition. This is sammāditti something. There's nothing called sammāditti, nothing called boundary. And when Jñānānanda says the furthest end of the near boundary is the short, nearest end of the further boundary. If you say end of this house is furthest end of this wall and nearest end of the space is the other side of the wall. But that is what you call boundary. It's a fixed one. It is not a permanent one. So therefore boundaries are so volatile. Now you can see UN having their own constitution and WHO have their own constitution, FAO having their own constitution, and they are conflict. Ultimately they are boiling down to Buddhism. Everyone is coming down to the Buddhism, telling the constitution is based on the common sense, humanity. So all the people learning, going to the boundary, fixing the boundaries and constitution was the beginning of the organization. But ultimately they have to understand for what? It's for the humanity, for the benefit of the human. But UN is working with for the America. Because they are the people give funds and UN is not going for American wish and will. America will not give funds. So we have to understand it, understand with its own due limitations. So, therefore, I, whenever I am talking and kind of thing, I ask other person, if you feel, if you see the rationality behind my view, my ditti, please let me know. I can declare this is what I am going to say, but it is not permanent. Next day morning, I will be another person. I may have another. This, it is not cheating nature, it's a changing nature. So, therefore, I cannot be a religious man. Religious man must have some kind of dogmas. With these dogmas only he can run the religious temple. Other people can't because they are changing the view. So Buddhism can accommodate any other religion. Other religions can't because they say this is the truth, rest is wrong. Buddha says this is the worst view. If someone says Idameva Saccha Mogamanya, and such idan sachabinivesa, that my truth is the truth, please avoid that man. No, because so that is what I don't know what is the present way and viewpoint of Venerable Dhammika, but at that time Nillambi was highly boiling pot. Everyone is coming from different views and they are in their views, and for me 20s and 30s it was completely new. And now only I find the Buddha words. Here the Buddha says, Sima Tigo, beyond limits. So they are considered as completely crux of the teaching of the Buddha, Attakavagga. Many people don't take it as for the discussion because they can't take a stand. Whatever the stand you take, you are wrong. So Sima Tigo, Brahmano tasa natti e bhuri prajna rahatyame chaturida kalesima ikma uyeya. He has gone beyond all the limits and no iniditti. He finds pros and cons of each and every ditti, so ultimately he takes no ditti. But you can say no ditti is ditti. And the Nisargadatta Maharaj, he was a BD business. And even after becoming a jnani, he used to smoke. So one was a devoted Hindu came and says, jnani, why you can't give up smoking? You are talking us and everything. And he says, good that you can understand, I am a smoker. Can you give up non-smoking? No, never. You see, understand, you are so attached to non-smoking and you are criticizing me. My smoking you can see, but you can't see your non-smoking criticism. And that is the way. So that is how religious people, working with the views, you can have a view, you can tell others, as far as you are dialectic and working, you can understand your stand, but not that you are vehemently limited with that limit, the view. So that is why the discussion. Discussion is completely new thing. In the atheism, there cannot be discussion because everything is in the holy book. Nothing to discuss and shape. But the Buddhism, the Buddha says, everything you must accept after the discussion and debate, don't accept as a dogma. So that, I appreciate Nilambe atmosphere. All the people come to Nilambe, is appreciating, you can talk openly. So I thought I will never be a good monk. Because monk must have his own view, his own dogma. But Nisanvan is not. Nisanvan is accommodating all the kind of thing. So even with corona, even with economic recession, we still thrive because of that dynamism. That's my remark.
Swaminand, are you saying, I have a question, is Buddhism trying to, it seems to me like we should give up eventually, if we're an arahant, end of the path, we've given up all views. Are we trying to cultivate the practice of non-views now? And gradually work towards the giving up of all views, clinging to a self, and so forth.
So, ultimatum, or absolute no views, and relatively you are already with, you have given up certain views so far. If you know that much, you are on the way. Absolute giving up happened at the end of the Arahant, at the Mahaparinirvana. Death of the Arahant in the common sense. Till that you have six senses, so that you have traces. But the amount, the percentage you have given up so far, you never appreciate it. More soon you appreciate, you are a positive thinker. Because all your friends and all your other family members, they are full of views. They are not never ready to give up, and they have not given up. But we are certainly a fair amount. We are given us, so we are happy. So far, so good. And that part is what the Buddha says, talk about that with the positive thinking. That is, talk with that positive terminology. Because after 2600 years, you can see how prolific the other views. They have campaign, they have missionaries, but we are not. Even the Buddhism, we are not. We are radical. So therefore, what we already achieved, that I can't, it is unbelievably encouraging how young children practice mindfulness and how they express themselves. They don't know views, but their expressions are so light, like butterflies. You can't mislead them. You can't mislead them because they are so innocent. They are full of humanity. But educationists are killing them. So I'm so happy, no classrooms now. No classrooms. Then when I go to Kaduvela, the children, all children come running and they are jumping to the river and making tools and all the kind of things. One mother came and told the monks, when they are coming and playing, why don't you teach them something? So one monk started teaching Pali. And the one playful girl, boy, came to the gate and just waiting and thinking. And the one another mother saw, Puta, why are you waiting there and thinking? Amma, they also going to start teaching something. Satyavasala is going to teach something, so I have a doubt. At the gate, he is thinking at home, distance education. At Satyavasala also, teaching something. So he is hesitant to go to Satyavasala. You see, that the other mother came and told Venerable Dhammavihari, that particular boy waiting at the gate and thinking whether to go into the Satyavasala or not. So they also start teaching. What a kind of conditioning, what a kind of thing. It's a crime. Bertrand Russell says, before the very understanding, and if someone is going to baptize a child, what a crime. And says that after baptizing, don't read these books, you are a God's child. This is what only you must see. The child has no choice. It's a crime against the humanity. Don't do it. Let the child grow. Give the nutriments, but don't give conditioning. Don't give boundaries. Just go. But parents can't do it. I don't have children, therefore I am not belongs to the parents. I can play with them. And the parents always think I have to teach something. Then finished. Playfulness, boisterous, they lost. And they really understand their freedom. That means no view. So we have to be like a children. We have to sit below them and listen, look up them and ask them rather than teaching, hey puta, hey dua, what is your wish? What can we do? They play. In America, there are a lot of children. They never go to schools, house learning or home learning. Okay. So rather than starting another sutta, that is the end of the Suddhattaka Sutta. Two points are the understanding the monkey mind and the no limits. They are the some kind of a gist of this sutta, and it is basically due to the person who is having the glowing chest, and when he's come to the Buddha, his ability disappears. Am I correct? So you can see faith healing, you can see magicians, you can see different medicine for corona. Every person is dying. The vaccine people also dying. The traditional medicine also dying. And so you have to understand Dhamma is there still. You can't deny the Dhamma. So you take all the precautions, but have a confidence of yourself rather than on the medicine or chemicals or kind of thing. They understand the most important thing is your confidence. And the Israeli people say your confidence is 13 times stronger than chemicals. Even for cancer, Israel have a special answer. Womb cancer, never in Israel. They have confidence and they have cleanliness doing. So therefore we have to develop the self-confidence. And for that, if you're having magical power, you are pathetically low in spirit. If you are believing magics, if you have ability, it's negative for your development. If you have no any ability, you are just a citizen, John. If you are just a commoner, well, very good. You are fully qualified to be a monk, or you got to be a mindful child, mindful family. You got to start mindfulness. All the people with the abilities, they never go for beginner's mind. Never go for mindfulness. Okay, we are going to end the session, and next day we will start with the Suddhattaka Sutta. Duttattaka is... Suddhattaka is finished. Yes. So we are going to go to the Paramattaka Sutta. So earlier I was thinking why it is called Attaka Vagga. Now only I see because many suttas are ending up with 8 verses, but towards the end that is also, that ditti also gone. Yes. Okay. Thank you very much for the participation. Okay. Kamami Kamitabbam.